I'll show you politics in America. Here it is, right here. I think the puppet on the right shares my beliefs. I think the puppet on the left is more to my liking. Hey, wait a minute. There's one guy holding up both puppets. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control.
Read my lips.
Just send your cash.
There has never been so many lies, so much deception.
Doesn't anyone notice this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
Please clap.
It's time for the Mike Madison Show, a new breed of conservative talk. Now, here's your host, Mike Madison.
Showtime! All right, good morning. Welcome to the Mike Madison Show here at 103.9 WYAB, weekdays 9 to 11 o'clock. I am your host, your shepherd to the fields of independent thought, critical thinking. Next hour, I'm expecting somebody from Americans for Prosperity, but I'll be honest, I forgot to text anybody this morning. I just work on the assumption these guys are busy these days with the session cranking up. So we'll see if we have a representative, either Cade Yates or Forrest Thigpen, coming in. If not, we'll soldier on. Well, we're going to take a look at some of the stuff legislature's doing. They've released a medical marijuana bill. I started perusing it, but it's 445 pages long. I scrolled kind of rapidly and got to a few things that were making my blood boil and stopped. So if AFP comes in, they may have already had time with their staff and their resources to have parsed through this thing. But that is one of their issues, particularly the financial side of it. They focus pretty much on economic issues. I want to remind everybody tonight, 6 o'clock at the Bulldog on Ridgewood Road, Americans for Prosperity will be having their pints and policy. Come by, they'll buy you dinner and grab you a glass of unsweetened tea. That's right, unsweet tea. And I'm sure they offer sweet tea, but in keeping with my health show, unsweet tea is where it's at. Or a beer. You can come join us. I will certainly be there. I've attended every single one. I think that they've had in the past couple of years. A really big fan of Americans for Prosperity, particularly in Mississippi, a state that needs more economic freedom. So that's tonight at 6 o'clock at the Bulldog, Ridgewood Road, Northeast Jackson. Quote of the day today, it's a quick, simple one, from James Madison, and I just have one, and it says it all. Crisis is the rallying cry of the tyrant. That's James Madison, one of the founding fathers. Again, nothing has changed over hundreds or thousands of years. Crisis is the rallying cry of the tyrant. And that's what we've seen, as they constantly put us into crisis mode and absorb more and more power from the federal government all the way down to George Flags over in Vicksburg that was micromanaging his citizens' movement through curfews and just all kinds of things. George Flags. I haven't seen any headlines on him lately. Maybe he's not lost his mind over the Omnicon. Maybe he's catching on. I doubt it. But anyway, it's about, what is it? It's about 9:10 in the morning. Do you know what your federal government is up to right now? Well, our friends at CNS News have got another report. I do these every month, every quarter, every year as they come out. CNSNews.com. Total federal tax collections in the first 3 months of fiscal 2022, that's October through December, set a record as they topped $1 trillion. That's tax collections, hitting $1,051,873,000,000, according to the monthly Treasury statement released today. First 3 months of fiscal 2021, the federal government collected $859 billion. Thus, from last year to this year, taxes are up $191,974,850,000, or 22.3% in the first 3 months of the fiscal year. At the same time that it was collecting a record $1,051,873,000,000 in total taxes in the October through December period, the federal government was spending $1.4 trillion. Thus, it ran a deficit, this is in the first 3 months of this fiscal year, of $377,694,000,000. Now, I want to bring up this point, as I always do. I'm never going to miss a chance for a teachable moment here. The record $1.05 trillion in total taxes the federal government collected in the first 3 months included $535 billion. I'm going to go ahead and do the whole amount because it matters. $535,398,000,000 in individual income taxes. $352 billion in Social Security and other retirement taxes. $23 billion in customs duties. I want you to listen to these customs duties. $20,515,000,000 in excise taxes. And $31,694,000,000 in what monthly Treasury statement calls miscellaneous receipts. And the reason that I read those other things, nobody really cares. Nobody's paying attention. You're not going to remember those numbers. The federal government takes in a lot of money outside of personal income taxes. They don't need that money out of your wallet. They take it because they can. They take it because you let them. And you look at all of these things and think that's $1 trillion in the first 3 months jerked out of the economy and put into the hands of these mental midgets in Washington, D.C. I talk a lot about crimes against humanity on this show, particularly when it comes to what we've has taken place over the last 22 months. This has been taking place for 100 years. It's a crime against the American people to steal this amount of money. The $535,398,000,000 that the Treasury collected in individual income taxes in October through December was also a record. This is at a time where inflation is raging. You're paying more for everything, getting less of everything. But they have collected a record amount of your income in that period of time. Of course, the Pentagon, they need that money because the Pentagon is looking for some of this fresh taxpayer cash stolen from our citizens. 2 years into the pandemic and now with Department of Defense-wide vaccine mandates threatening early discharge for all troops not in compliance, the U.S. Army is struggling to meet its enlistment quotas, especially for jobs deemed critical and highly skilled. To lure new recruits, the Army is rolling out with its maximum enlistment bonus of $50,000 to be offered on a broader scale for all highly skilled recruits who agree to sign a 6-year contract. So let's just break this down a little bit. Your federal government and your Pentagon, again, a teachable moment. Do you remember cheering for all these huge Pentagon budgets? You remember that, don't you? It wasn't that long ago. Many of you will cheer this year when Michael Guest takes to the campaign trail and tells you that he's always out there fighting to get the military every nickel he can give them. And conservatives cheer for it. This is the military. This is the Pentagon budget you cheer for is the same Pentagon that just canned a bunch of people who didn't want to take an experimental vaccine and is now having to replace them. And they're tacking on extra $50,000 for each one of the replacements. Because, hell, it's not their money. They didn't have to earn it. You're the one who woke up in the morning. You're the one that works for 3 or 4 months a year, and they take every nickel that you have for that period of time. What do they care? Why just $50,000? How about $100,000? The tax pigeons, the wage slaves, the sharecroppers that are the American taxpayer, they'll pony up more without a peep. So disgusting stuff. I mean, it's unbelievable. And to tack on to this, and I've had this story for a couple of days now. You may have already heard about it. I apologize for being late to the game here. But that same military, that same Pentagon that you have just risen to your feet for endless military budgets. Donald Trump constantly told you how he was getting more and more and more and more. He got us up into this $700 billion figure for the Pentagon, and he brought the audience to their feet. What's the Pentagon doing with their money now? A realistic guerrilla war will be fought across 24 North Carolina counties in the coming weeks with, quote, young soldiers battling seasoned freedom fighters, according to the U.S. Army. Called Robin Sage, the exercise serves as a final test for Special Forces qualification course training, and it places candidates in a politically unstable country known as, anyone, Pineland. Now, I got to tell you, we've accepted these kinds of training things for decades. You know, they do these things regularly. Nothing more ominous about this one than there have been about the other ones. Well, except for the fact that the Department of Justice just set up their own domestic terrorist branch. But I don't know if you've ever been to the Middle East. I have not, but I've seen pictures. I didn't see a lot of pine trees. You know, the idea that maybe this is, oh, this is just training to take on insurgents and freedom fighters in these countries we constantly invade halfway around the world over there in the sand. But it is sand. I don't see a lot of, not a lot of pine trees in Fallujah is my understanding. The candidates here, the people participating in this, the candidates face off against seasoned service members from units across Fort Bragg as the specially trained civilian, as well as specially trained civilians. The setting is, quote, characterized by armed conflict, forcing the students to solve problems in real-world settings. Quote, these military members act as a realistic opposing force in guerrilla freedom fighters, also known as Pineland Resistance Movement. Hmm, that's interesting. Pineland. You people down in Hattiesburg need to be careful. The Pine Belt, they may be coming for you first. They're going to have special targeted training for you kind of people. So there's your Pentagon budget. Congratulations on shoveling money into the military-industrial complex for the last 30 years under the guise of patriotism and republicanism. And meanwhile, on Main Street, as they're collecting these record individual income taxes, there's a great thing, a tweet put out. I'm going to do the misguided attempt I make constantly to describe charts over the radio. There's a guy I follow. His name is Sven Henrik. He goes by Northman Trader. If you're interested in economic stuff, stock market stuff, cryptocurrency stuff, particularly charts and trends in those things, Northman Trader on Twitter's got a very interesting feed. It's entertaining. He's got a pretty good sense of humor. That's a qualifier for maddening news. I like someone to do it with a sarcastic tone, and Northman Trader does that. But he's put out a tweet of the chart that shows the Wilshire 5000. This is basically the overall stock market index chart. And of course, since the Federal Reserve started up the printing presses and that money finds itself right into Wall Street, the Wilshire chart it's like a rocket ship. Well, it's a good roll up a pretty strong hill. I'll put it that way. You understand. Comes from the bottom left up to the top right, but it's juxtaposed with the consumer sentiment chart, which shows consumer sentiment falling off a cliff. It's way down while the stock market is way up, and I loved it because the way that Sven Henrik, this tweeter, described it, he said the consumer is in a recession. Wall Street's not. The banks aren't. God knows the Pentagon isn't in a recession, but the consumer, you know, the sharecropper taxpayer, we're all in a recession. It's boom time for the oligarchs, for the Pentagon, for the Wall Streeters. Meanwhile, the average American out there struggling with the high prices and everything else. It's just really, it's so stark at this point. I find it hard to believe that people can truly ignore this. Yet they'll find, you vote really hard in the midterms and maybe this will all change. I'll be right back.
I want a girl with a mind like a diamond. I want a girl who knows what's best.
I want a girl with shoes. I found some very interesting information today. When it comes to the COVIDs, these are interesting statistics. These are on the Drudge Report today. I believe Drudge is a bit of one of the hysterics out there. He's comparing cases between last year and this year, and deaths between last year and this year. And boy, there is a lot of information in these four little lines. So comparing the number of cases in the United States, you know, we're trying to run another hysterical case-demic now. I do know a lot of people right now who are sick. There's definitely something going around. But I am clear-headed enough to remember 2019, 2018, 2017, 2016, 2015, 14, 13, 12. I just remember years all the time where I'm like, man, everybody's getting the flu. There are so many people sick right now. I remember when my kids were in school. And because I fed them well and gave them supplements, they were attending. They weren't sick, but there were a lot of their classmates out. And it was normal. We didn't devolve into a puddle of tears and didn't hide behind useless masks at the time. It just happened. So the same thing is happening this year. Here's the case count, though. Last year on January 12th, there were 229,977 cases. This year on January 12th, there are 851,910, almost a quadrupling, almost four times as many cases right now. Of course, this is driven by the relentless payoff to Abbott Labs for testing. And this I've explained to you. This is Abbott Labs, one of the pharmaceutical companies. They've got their turn at the plate. We're going to bat through the whole order of pharmaceutical companies. You understand, right? They're all going to get a piece of this pie, and it's Abbott Labs Day. So they are rolling out the testing for everybody. So we've got a case-demic based on testing. If we were to have gone around in 2017 and tested every single person trying to figure out if they have the flu, we would have had a lot of flu cases. I'm just saying. Of course, we never did that because we were far more rational back then. Anyway, so we've got a quadrupling of cases on the same day last year versus this year. Now we've got four times as many. Yet here are the deaths in January 12th of 2021. We had 4,406 deaths. In January 12th of 2022, we've got 2,730 deaths. Huh. So we've got four times the cases and half the deaths. Can we stop this now? What does that mean? This is one-eighth. One-eighth as deadly as COVID was last year. And even at that time, the survival rate for anybody under 70 years old was 99.9%. Now, I'm a public school graduate. To pull through those numbers and try to reverse engineer those statistics is above my pay grade here. But I would imagine your survival rate now is significantly better than 99.9%. But that's not stopping the hysterical children running our U.S. Senate. Check this out. Senator Bernie Sanders on Wednesday announced the reintroduction of legislation to get free N95 masks to all Americans to, quote, prevent death and suffering, unquote. As the coronavirus pandemic continues to rage amid an explosive surge in cases driven by the highly contagious Omni variant, they don't list it in this story, but what it should say, an explosive surge in cases driven by the relentless testing. The Masks for All Act, which has 15 co-sponsors in the Senate, including Democratic Senators Elizabeth Warren and Ed Markey of Massachusetts, would ensure that all individuals, from college students to medical professionals to the unhoused, would receive a free package of three N95 respirator masks. This is all for a disease, again, that has now become less deadly than the regular flu. If you think this is going to be over, even when the COVID pandemic is over, if they want to give every American, even the unhoused, even those experiencing homelessness, I don't know exactly how you get those masks to those people. They were further down in the story. I didn't clip it, but they were going to use the Postal Service. Of course, this means that the masks will arrive late July. But anyway... So for a disease less dangerous to people than the regular flu, everybody's going to get three N95 masks. That gets you through 3 days. You do understand that you have to change these things out, right? As I explained yesterday, if you're out there wearing the surgical mask now, you finally have caught it. It only took 22 months, but you figured out the cloth mask is no bueno. You finally figured that out. Now you're wearing the surgical mask. You do know you need to change that out every 2 hours, right? Brand new mask every 2 hours, and no touching, no touching. Doctors, probably not a fan of this show, but just to really show you doctors, I talked yesterday, and a couple times now, I've read off the list of organizations within our medical establishment, the AMA, you know, OBGYN association, just about basically every medical association of professionals came out in favor of vaccine mandates, forcing you. They want you out on the streets with no job if you do not accept the vaccine into your life. This is your medical establishment. Well, they're not satisfied just with the mandates. They also want censorship. A coalition of doctors and science educators is calling for Spotify to take action against misinformation spread on the Joe Rogan Experience podcast. This is a quote from these 270 healthcare professionals. Quote, by allowing the propagation of false and societally harmful assertions, Spotify is enabling its hosted media to damage public trust in scientific research and sow doubt in the credibility of data-driven guidance offered by medical professionals. So the doctors, the medical establishment in this country is not satisfied with mandates forcing you to do something against your will. They also want censorship. They don't want you to be able to hear anything that they don't sign off on. These are the same doctors that when you go and you do some own research into your own health, because your health is, after all, your responsibility, they look at you and they go, what, have you been reading the internet again? Yeah, doc, I'm really wanting to get off all these medications. I'll tell you when it's time to get off these medications, and that's never. Anyway, not content with mandates, now they want censorship. Unbelievable things are happening to our medical class in this country. When I come back, we got a little bit of a callback. You'd have to be a regular listener to this show for months and months and months to remember me picking on the West Virginia governor. I'm going to play you some clips of some of the press conferences he came out and did in his aw shucks format, where he encouraged the jab, and then we'll see how that's going for him today. Be right back. We are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. Thanks for joining me today. So I have spent a good deal of time in the past making fun of the Republican governor of West Virginia. I throw his party in there just because it just gives me an opportunity to take another stab at the two-party system that has tricked so many people for so long. Now, his name is Jim Justice, and Jim Justice was on the vaccine train. He was ready to get everybody very excited about it. This was the West Virginia governor, Jim Justice. I'm not sure how long ago. I think this was maybe summertime this year. He got all jitty. He got all jitty about the vaccine program and wanted to make sure that his citizens were just as jitty as he was.
You know, today we're going to tell you that we are on the cusp. And we've got to figure it out exactly how to do exactly all this, because we have got to make sure that all those that are vaccinated can get in the system and be eligible for the drawings.
Free stuff.
We have people that have been vaccinated for a long time, haven't we? You know, all the way back, I guess, into late December or early January. Okay? All those people need to be eligible for these drawings as well. And we're going to draw... We're going to draw for college scholarships for kids, multiple college scholarships for our kids. We're going to absolutely draw, and please somebody tell me the name of the pickup, what we're going to do with the pickup truck. Is it Rock? We're going to have 10 Rocky Ridge F-150 pickup trucks, and I guess they tailor make those into that.
Yeah.
We're going to absolutely, we're going to draw for all kinds of things from the standpoint of, well, of course, we want as many winners as we can possibly come up with. And so in all of that, we're also going to draw for some real big cash prizes. And those big cash prizes, we're going to do exactly what Ohio's already done. But we're going to make a few West Virginians millionaires before this is over.
Oh, yeah. So this was during the giveaway phase of the vaccine program. I guess they've kind of tailed off on that. They were going to make some millionaires there. This was West Virginia Governor Jim Justice. He was competing with Republican Governor Mike DeWine, isn't that his name, over in Ohio. I think they were one of the first states to roll out the Mega Millions for the jab. They were going to make some millionaires if you lined up to take the jab. This was also, this one's just, you know, I listen to a lot of political speech, and I think, are people really falling for this? And I have to take myself back into my 20-something. Back when I was young and naive and what I consider now incredibly dumb. And I used to buy into political speeches. I used to buy into politic talk when it, you know, was on my side. When I heard Trent Lott speak, I felt like I was listening to messages directly from above. I took all his talking points out and I spread them around. So I guess people still fall for this stuff. This was, you know, but this one's pretty bad. This is, again, West Virginia Governor Jim Justice giving you one more reason to go out and take the jab.
All right, now listen. If you won't do it for me, if you won't do it for your family, you've got to get vaccinated for baby dog. That's all there is to it.
This is his dog he has brought to the press conference. He wants you to do it for his dog.
Now, she wants you vaccinated so badly, and she's going to absolutely be the one to lead us through on this, all these incentives. And without any question, she'll give you a high five right now, but you have got to get yourself vaccinated. She wants you vaccinated, I want you vaccinated, and I want a bunch of you to win all this stuff and everything, and that'd be just great. So anyway, I wanted to make you smile a little bit. She came with me today, and appreciate you waiting for us and everything. Like I said, we were doing some really important work earlier today.
Yeah, Idiocracy was a documentary. So that's how it started. How's it going now? West Virginia Governor Jim Justice announced on Tuesday he had tested positive for COVID-19 and was feeling, quote, extremely unwell. According to a press release, Justice, who was fully vaccinated and boosted, got tested after experiencing a, quote, sudden onset of symptoms, unquote. West Virginia's First Lady Kathy Justice tested negative on Tuesday evening. Quote, while I was surprised that my test results came back positive, I can do his voice. While I was surprised that my test results came back positive, I'm thankful to the Lord above that I've been vaccinated and I've been boosted and that I have an incredible support system, especially my loving family. And I'm sure he meant to thank baby dog. That being said, I feel extremely unwell at this point, and I have no choice but to postpone my State of the State address to the legislature. Extremely unwell. And just listen to the conditioning there. I'm thankful to the Lord above that I've been vaccinated and I've been boosted. But I feel extremely unwell. I thought it protected against bad outcomes. Anyway, that was how it started and how it's going now for Jim Justice in West Virginia. I'll be right back. You might be on my side right now. Stick around. Trigger alert for the next segment.
I was afraid. I was petrified. I kept thinking I could never live without you by my side. But then I spent so many nights just thinking how you'd done me wrong. I grew strong. I learned how to get along.
All right, let's do the popular stuff first. They're reporting that Joe Biden's approval rating right now is at 33%. And you got to assume with a lot of polling, I didn't pull up who the poll is from, but you got to feel like maybe they really searched for some people on the left, you know, tried to weight this thing to get Joe Biden over the 30%. I mean, the guy is going down in flames. I am not somebody that can tell you the truth about why Joe Biden is president, but I believe he's a sacrificial lamb. I think they're figuring that somehow during this term, they're going to pull the plug on the U.S. economy. They have to. They've built up such excesses. It's so fragile. They've got to find a way to pull the plug. And I think Joe Biden, he's a throwaway. He's an empty suit. He doesn't understand what's going on. There's a story about an island off of the coast of England. It's just a few hundred acres, maybe. It's got a castle from the 1300s. They're looking for a caretaker for the castle. You have to also man the tavern there, and you become the king of this, whatever it is, municipality. They have like kind of a ritual. You sit in an antique chair. You hold a rusty sword. They put a helmet on your head, and they pour a beer over your head, and you become the king of this place. They're looking for a new king for this area. I got to tell you, I may find out how I could apply. This is a very... It can actually, when the tide is low, you can walk to the mainland there. But it is this small little island that has ferry service and walking tours, obviously a very historic place. They say you've got to really be prepared to spend a lot of time by yourself. The more I see of society, the more time I want to myself. But, you know, I was looking at this thing thinking, well, you know, this might be something. If I want to expat somewhere, going to be the king of somewhere, that might be fantastic. There'll be no taxes on that island, I can guarantee you that. I started thinking about it, too, and you kind of have to see this thing to understand what I'm saying, because it's really small. I mean, you know, you take a drone up, you see the entire island, just up a couple, you know, maybe 100 feet. You can see the whole island and this ancient castle that's there. And I was thinking, you know, our president, because in the description of this thing, it said you've got to be the caretaker of the island. Now, if there's big repairs, the town that's juxtaposed to it comes in and helps a little bit. But for basic maintenance, you've got to keep the operation of this little island and the castle and the tavern yourself, even out of your own pocket. And I was looking at this thinking, you know, the president of the United States, the most powerful country that has ever been in planet Earth, is run by a man who could not run that island. If he was sent to be the king of this little island and just had to maintain the facilities and run the tavern, I guarantee you he could not pull that off. And yet somehow he is the president of the United States. It's quite a little country we got running here. Anyway, Biden approval rating right now being reported at 33% and sinking fast. So there you go. I did the popular stuff first. Now I'm going to get to the trigger alert stuff. Trump has come out, and I've been extremely critical of him for a whole host of reasons, but particularly lately, on this vaccine stuff. He's been booed at some of his things, and then I was really disgusted when Trump came out and tried to get his supporters to embrace the vaccine as something that they should take credit for. He said, whenever you poo-poo this vaccine, you're playing right into their hands. I have yet to be able to figure out who the they are that he's referring to. But he actually was trying to convince his supporters that you did this. Take the shot. It's yours. You should be so happy about this. And I was really disgusted by that attempted manipulation and then the gross applause. And one of his things where he asked people, do you agree with me? This is when he was on tour with the warmonger Bill O'Reilly. I told you there's going to be a lot of triggers in this segment of the show right here. But the idea is, in talking to Trump supporters, well, you know, Mike, he doesn't know. Candace Owens did this interview with him where he hawked the vaccine again, wants his supporters to accept it into their lives. And Candace Owens came in as a defense for him and said, look, he's an old man. He doesn't get on the internet. He doesn't know how to do his research. To which I would say, who the hell is he surrounding himself with then? If he's not going to do his research, has he surrounded himself with big pharma or just establishment hacks? Apparently, obviously he has. But then there was this clip that came out. One American News just has done an interview with Trump. I tried to find the whole thing. All I could find was this clip. So I'll qualify a little bit at the end of this. But the idea that Trump doesn't understand what's going on with this vaccine, that's over now.
In a second, but the other one was the vaccine.
Right.
You recently stated in an interview with Candace Owens and when you were on the road with Bill O'Reilly doing the book tour and the speaking engagement that you've had the vaccine, two shots, and you've had the booster.
Right.
And you recommend it for folks. We have seen with the VAERS report, there's tens of thousands of side effects, more side effects in this vax than any vax in history, and more deaths. Dr. Robert Malone, 9 patents for the mRNA technology being used in the vaccines. He came on my program a couple weeks ago and said, unless you're over 65 and have a comorbidity, I recommend it. Other than that, I don't recommend taking it. He even is upset he took it himself. He's having heart issues. Looking back, we know that Warp Speed was great. You did amazing with getting rid of red tape to get something out there. But after now so many months of the vaccine being administered and these side effects and Americans' questions of it, Do you reconsider your push for it, or what's your view now on the vaccine in general?
Well, okay, his first knee-jerk reaction, what you're going to hear is a deflection, okay? First thing he's going to do on this thing is deflect and answer a question that was not asked.
Well, I've taken it. I've had the booster. Many politicians, I watched a couple of politicians be interviewed, and one of the questions was, did you get the booster? Because they had the vaccine. And they, they're answering it like, in other words, the answer is yes, but they don't want to say it. Because they're gutless. You got to say it. Whether you had it or not, say it. Right. But the fact is that I think the vaccine has saved tens of millions of people throughout the world. Okay. I have had absolutely no side effects. I've had it like other people have had it, nothing special. I've had it.
Do you feel for the millions of Americans that have it, though? There's over 100 million that haven't taken it yet. And they have questions, especially younger people with the myocarditis and things.
I don't think young, healthy people should take it. Okay. I don't think that certainly these young kids, their immune system is so strong. I look at I have a son, Baron, who's 15. He had it. It lasted for about 2 seconds, yeah. Okay? I said, we've got it. Baron, you've got it. And, like, by the time we called the doctor, it was gone. You know, they have a very strong immune system. Right.
So there you go. Now, the interview cuts off there. If anybody, I went to One American News to try to find the entire interview to do my due diligence, but I could not find it on One American News Network. They interview President Trump, and they don't have the full interview pinned to the top of their page. I couldn't find it on there. I didn't spend a lot of time, but you would have thought it would have been easy to do. So maybe he said something off that after that. The idea now that Donald Trump does not know what's going on with this shot, that he does not know that Robert Malone is out there as an inventor of the mRNA vaccine technology saying, don't take this thing. The idea that he does not know that VAERS is loaded up with adverse events, deaths, permanent disabilities, emergency room visits, miscarriages, that's over. He knows. He doesn't care. Donald Trump doesn't care about that. And this is just really, so it dispels this notion, even the Candace Owens trying to cover his butt by some strange way of saying, look, he's incompetent on this issue. He just rushed out a shot, but he's not going to do any research on how it actually affects the American people. Give him a break. This was the Candace Owens approach to this. And I can appreciate a lot of what Candace Owens does. She's been very vocal against these shots and the experimental nature of them. But for her to then try to come out and carry water for Trump because he refuses to acknowledge that this thing's a disaster. He's clinging to this. It's saved tens of millions of lives. Are there any of you out there that are ardent Trump supporters that believe that these shots have saved tens of millions of lives? He's still saying this up to and including now in this interview, a couple of days old. So he knows what's going on with VAERS. He knows the disaster this is. Now he says it may be enough for the person who just wants to, you know, they're going to find anything they can cling to and go, well, he did say young people shouldn't take it. Well, those words are about as empty as anything. He's not come out forcefully and opposed any mandates for children or opposed shots for children. He's not spending his time trying to save our children. No, he's got one interview where the interviewer puts him on the spot, and I think he just off the cuff said that. He's probably going to get in some trouble, and I wouldn't be surprised if he issues a statement going, now look, many young people could benefit from this because his pharma masters are going to come calling. Hey, Don, you're cutting off a giant chunk. You understand we've got to get this on the childhood schedule, man. Don't be telling people the kids don't need this shot. Getting it on the schedule is what gives us permanent liability immunity. So I'm just kind of making a bit of a prediction here that you may hear some backpedaling from Trump on the idea that kids shouldn't take this thing because, again, his big pharma masters, and yes, he has them, he put an Eli Lilly guy in charge of Health and Human Services. He got millions of dollars for his campaign and I think $1 million from Pfizer directly for his inauguration in 2017. Donald Trump is compromised by Big Pharma, just like the rest of them. Nothing special about that, Nothing more evil than the rest of the politicians bought and paid for by Big Pharma, but Donald Trump, even though he's rich. Oh, Mike, he can't be bought. He's a billionaire. Really? Are you hearing the words coming out of his mouth? So I think that clip is important to understand. Now we know that he has been confronted live on television with the VAERS data, with the Robert Malone information. He doesn't have to go to the internet as an old man who doesn't understand how to navigate the world wide webs, according to Candace Owens. He has been told publicly exactly what's going on with this shots. So unless there's an about face now, unless there's some kind of a press conference where he goes, holy cow, nobody told me about VAERS. Oh my gosh, I wasn't familiar with Robert Malone. Why didn't you guys tell me about Robert Malone? Unless he does that in the next couple of days, you better understand who Donald Trump is. He's one of them. I told you this was going to be a triggering segment, and I apologize. We'll get to some other things, and I may get you back on my side, but I just call him like I see him. And Donald Trump is participating in the greatest crime against humanity that we've ever seen. I'll be right back. We are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB, and it's Thursday. Every Thursday from 10 to 11 o'clock, we do our Freedom and Prosperity Hour with a representative from Americans for Prosperity, and we've got Forrest Thigpen in with us today. Forrest, I appreciate you coming in again.
Yeah, glad to be here.
I would imagine you guys are hustling these days, so.
Yes.
Yeah.
Session is in full swing, and so are we.
Yeah. Yeah, and I know you've got people that, you know, positions open, so you have fewer people than you had last year, and the session just cranking up. Do they gavel in every day at 2 o'clock? Is that the case for the
Senate comes in right now? The Senate comes in the mornings at 10,
and
the House in the afternoons at 2, and then after the committee deadline, then they both meet all day. But right now, with bills in committee, usually they only meet for a few minutes. Because the committees are working.
Right.
Yesterday, they did have a fair amount of activity, especially in the House. They passed two major bills.
Yeah. Okay, so we want to get to those things. What were the two big bills that came out of the House?
Well, with the income tax elimination bill was the first one, and then the teacher pay raise was the other one. The income tax bill was introduced 2 days ago and passed out of committee 2 days ago.
Wow.
And passed out of the full House yesterday. So it was another one of those that there's very little time to evaluate because it just wasn't out there. The details weren't out there ahead of time. But it passed with an overwhelming majority.
So do we have the same scenario here? We have the federal level that they have to pass it to see what's in it type thing? I mean, or do these guys all have a staff that are parsing through? I had someone send me the medical marijuana bill. Obviously, I'm very curious about that. It's 445 pages long.
Yeah. Well, one thing to remember about long bills is that generally the first few pages, now in this case, it is the first 100 pages, but it's usually that the first few pages are the substance of the bill, and then all the rest of it is taking existing laws that you need to go in there and say, except according to this bill, the current bill. And so it could be pages long of one code section that the only change is to say, comma, except as provided in this bill.
Right.
And so for each agency that's affected, for each program that's affected, that they have to go in and do that to conform the law.
All right. So what is the income tax bill that the House passed look like?
It is somewhat similar in structure to what the House passed last year, the Speaker's plan, but it does have a lot of improvements. Last year, the premise of both bills, last year and this year, is that they will reduce the income tax, personal income tax, by increasing the personal exemptions. And I won't get into all the technical aspects of tax law, but what that means is that the tax rate will continue, top tax rate will continue to be 5%.
Right.
But they will increase the exemptions.
So they're excluding more and more of your income from taxation.
Yes. And it would be up to $40,000. So anyone who has taxable income of less than $40,000 would not pay any state income tax. And then one of the good things about the bill is that it has a cap of 1.5% growth in the state revenue, in the state budget, basically, each year, or the rate of inflation, whichever is lower. And they didn't have that provision last year. So so if revenue comes in that's more than 1.5% above last year, the previous year, then they take whatever amount that is, a little or a lot. And, of course, this year it's a whole lot more.
Is this just revenue from personal income taxes, or is this
total
government?
No, this is general fund revenue.
Okay.
That it would be used to calculate how much can we then increase more the exemptions above the $40,000 for next tax year.
Right.
So that eventually through growth in the economy, then instead of growing the state budget, you're actually increasing the path toward eliminating the income tax.
So how long would that take? I mean, I guess on a, you know, we don't really ever know about growth, but I mean, in your mind, is this, are we 5 years away from complete elimination, 20 years?
Well, what the House leadership is saying is they are estimating about 12 years before it's all gone.
Yeah. That's a long time.
Yeah. And plus, you know, the part of the reason for eliminating the state income tax is to be able to say to the rest of the country, hey, Mississippi is another one of those states that has no income tax.
Right.
Come here. But you really only get that once you get to zero.
Right.
And besides that, all the rankings that are done of state tax structures, they all look at what the top rate is. And so if you're not lowering the top rate, then anybody who's looking to see what tax environment might be most friendly to the, for their business, they're going to look at Mississippi and see, well, we're still at 5%.
Right.
And Arkansas has passed a bill this year that they're potentially phasing out all the way, but they're going to be at 4.9% in a couple of years. So, of course, Tennessee has no income tax. So, you know, already we're going to be seen as higher, even though it's 0.1%. So if you want to get the PR effect, I think you have to deal with the rates. And I think they're willing to look at that, but that's not in this bill. So to pay for that reduction in revenue from eliminating the income tax, last year's proposal was to increase the general sales tax to 9.5% from the current 7% to 9.5%. And this year's bill increases it to 8.5%. So that's actually a significant difference.
What is the exemption rate? You say this would take it to $40,000. Your first $40,000, you wouldn't pay any state income taxes. What is it now? What's the exemption rate?
And it would be $80,000 for a couple. So right now, the exemption right now is $6,000 for an individual, $12,000 for a couple. But then you also have the standard deduction that they're including in that $40,000, and that's $2,200. I don't remember, $3,400 per couple. So they're combining those. So it's going basically from about $16,000 per couple to $80,000.
Yeah.
And then
so a lot of people would see.
Oh yeah.
Well, a lot of people would see a savings from that.
They would see a savings from the income tax. They would pay more in sales tax. It does, like last year, it does reduce the grocery tax over a few years to where it would eventually be down to 4%. And new this year is they added a provision that will cut car tags. You know, people generally say that, you know, the price of a car tag is
right.
So expensive.
The tax.
That's just the local ad valorem tax.
Right.
And so it would have the effect of reducing that by one third. So people will see a cut in their what tax they pay on that.
How much of car tags is state and how much of it is local? Do you
know? None of it is state. It's all local. And so that's the reason I said it would have the effect of being a tax cut, because the state will then make the counties whole for what they cut in their ad valorem tax. And that's going to cost about $200 million.
Yeah, it could be a lot. I mean,
a year.
Yeah, I mean, the difference between a tag in Hinds County and Madison County is stark,
right?
About tripling, something along that, maybe the last time I kind of took a look at it. But
so I have a concern about that. You know, they're building in an extra $200 million to the state budget to send to the local governments to be able to cut the cost of a car tag.
Well, also, so if you theoretically, for an individual, you've taken the amount of money that is not subject to state income tax from approximately $10,000 to $40,000. So you got about, am I correct there? You said $6,000 exemption plus around a $3,400.
So half that for person. So basically, you know, $7,000 or $8,000 to $40,000.
Yeah. So, and I don't want to try to do math on air here with you, but how much, when you raise the sales tax, you know, what's the net benefit there? I mean, because you have to know the rate on that $30,000 that's excluded now, and then how much you pay. But obviously, are they trying to sell this as revenue neutral?
No, they're selling it actually as a tax cut.
Okay, so less revenue to the government.
Right.
Okay, well, that's a positive. I hate that revenue neutral word they always trot out, which means we're still going to take our money. We're just going to take it from somewhere else.
Yeah.
So we feel like... even with the increase in sales taxes, I can't even really mentally wrap my mind around. I mean, how much do I pay in sales tax every year? I don't know. I don't know if there's a figure for how much the average person pays in sales tax, because if it's 7% now and it's going to 9, or now you say 8, you can make a calculation on how much more you would pay. Is there an average?
Yeah, 8.5% is what they're going to. And what the speaker said last year when it was going to 9.5%, is that anybody under, I think any individual under $80,000 was going to see a net tax cut, because the amount, and so they figured, I don't know how they figured up how much sales tax people generally spend.
There's got to be an average number out there somewhere.
Because there's so many things that you don't pay sales tax on, like
right.
You know, rent or mortgage or drugs, and utilities. And so there's a lot of money that you spend that you don't pay sales tax.
Right. That's why I can't really put my mind around it. So it's not how much you spend each year. You can't calculate it off of that.
Right.
But then the cut in the grocery taxes would also be an additional savings, because particularly at the lower rungs, that's probably a bulk of what they spend.
Yeah.
You know?
And a lot of the objection last year was from retirees, because the legislature years ago exempted retirement income from income tax. So you have a lot of retirees who already are not paying income tax. And so they were saying, if you increase my sales tax, then that is a tax increase on me.
Right.
And so by cutting the grocery tax and the ad valorem tax on cars, then, you know, that supposedly would be even more of at least a break even, if not a cut for them.
Right. What is the thinking at the legislative level when they are trying to figure out how to do all of this? Because this is a lot of tinkering. Just you and I talking about this for 5 minutes right now. You know, they're giving you a little something here, taking a little something away there. You know, the retirees don't pay here. They've exempted them. But, is there a – do they go with something saying we need to bring in X number of dollars, let's figure out how to do it? You know, like I look at the federal government and I realize now, and it's never been more apparent to me, that individual federal income tax is just essentially a punitive, because we print so much money now and we go into such debt that we have pretty much shown that they don't need income to spend money. You know, they don't need to take money out of people's pockets. They will print up $6 trillion and hand it out and add it. You know what I mean? I mean, it just, there's no calculation where the federal government goes, we need to bring in $4 trillion because that's what we need to spend this year. We need to figure out how to make that happen. They just set tax rates, and then whatever comes in there, they probably don't even look at the receipts. They just spend what they're going to spend. And so you end up with $1, $2 trillion deficits. Does the state have any more of a calculation on saying we need to bring in a certain amount, and so we work backwards from that? Or is it just the kind of making it up piece by piece by piece by piece?
Well, obviously the state doesn't have the ability to print money. And by law, some people think it's in the Constitution, but it's not. But by law, they do have to have a balanced budget. And, of course, they still pass a bond bill every year where they are borrowing money. But almost all of that is actually for long-term projects that you wouldn't necessarily put in a regular budget, but an annual budget. But the answer to your question is that who knows what that number is, because just like with the federal, the ARPA money that's come in, $1.8 billion, they have $7 billion in requests from agencies and local governments for how to use that. So, but they do have a structure that they come up with a budget, but they do that starting with what is the estimate of how much money we're going to have.
Right.
And then they allocate that. That generally is the process.
So if they are just estimating and budgeting off of an estimate, what happens when the estimate comes in short?
When that has happened occasionally, and then the governor has the authority to cut agency budgets up to 5%, and that's happened before.
Because they can't overspend. They can't go into deficit spending.
Right.
Yeah.
That's right. And it to their credit, I mean, the Revenue Estimating Committee generally has done a pretty good job. They've been way off the last couple of years.
Sure.
But at least it's not short.
You know, in the positive, they had no idea the money that was going to rain down on the states.
Yeah. And so it was good that they had the estimate they did, because that at least had somewhat of a restraint on spending. But the provision in the House bill that caps the growth of the budget at 1.5%, if they can hold that over the years, then that's a very positive thing.
So this is passed the House?
It's passed the House. I don't think there's any way it will pass in its current form in the Senate. The Lieutenant Governor has said that they're working on a package that will provide some kind of tax relief, but no real specifics. He said he's not a fan of the tax swap that is, you know, trading the sales tax for the income tax.
Is Delbert a fan of getting rid of the state income tax, or is he opposed to that too as a Democrat?
He
is a Democrat, isn't he?
He has hinted at that. He hasn't, I don't believe he's actually come out and said, I'm for eliminating the income tax, but he has sort of hinted around it. I do think there are senators who are working on it who do want to eliminate the tax.
Yeah. What's the chance of them coming together and passing something this year that's substantive? Is any better shot than last year?
I think there's a better shot than last year, because last year the Speaker's bill came out in a couple of days and the House passed it. And so the Senate said, we haven't, you know, this is brand new. We haven't done all the work to see what effect this really will have on people. And so they've done some work over the years. So I do think that there's a better chance. Also, I think the public perception will be bad, just like with the marijuana bill.
Right.
If they don't do it, then it's going to be seen as a failure of Republican leadership to get things done.
Yeah.
When you have the governor, lieutenant governor, and the speaker supposedly all in favor of cutting taxes.
Yeah. Is this that passed the House? I know last year Philip Gunn kind of had his thing. That wasn't, and there were problems with that bill, is my recollection of that. Is this Philip Gunn's bill again, pretty much?
Yeah, and like I said, it's essentially the same kind of structure. It's just the rates are better, you know,
a little bit better,
and then the car tag deal is new.
Yeah. Okay. All right. We're talking to Forrest Thigpens with Americans for Prosperity. They're down there in the legislature, paying attention to what's going on. We'll talk when we come back. I wanted to hear about teacher pay raises and what that means for us. And it sounds like our teacher's about to get rich. So we'll talk about that when we come back. Stay with us.
Right into this world. All alone, God takes your soul. You're on your own.
All right, we are back with Forrest Thigpen from Americans for Prosperity. He's going to be narrating what's going on in legislative session for us lay people out here who can't keep up with all of it. So my understanding is education is going to be fixed very soon. We are going to have probably the greatest educational system in the country very, very soon, right? That's got to be the net effect.
What they passed yesterday, the House passed yesterday, was a bill that will bump starting teacher pay, starting this fall, in that school year, in the next school year, starting teacher pay will go will be increased by $6,000. It'll go from $37,000 to $43,000, and almost all the all other teachers' salaries will be increased by $4,000.
So everybody's getting a nice little raise.
Everybody,
yeah,
no matter what the district income. You know, the average, the median income is, no matter whether the teachers are doing a good job.
Right. No results based or anything like that. I mean, do you think that so the idea of this would be we need to attract good teachers to this? I mean, is that
attract good teachers and presumably stop teachers who are from here from going to other states where they get where they do get paid $4,000 more?
Right.
So that's that's part of it. It's because apparently we have a teacher shortage, and so this would help us with that.
Theoretically.
Theoretically.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's people want to see results from their schools, and I think anybody wants to see a good teacher rewarded, particularly if they make an impact on the children. But, you know, a scattershot approach to this, it feels like a good headline that's going to make a lot of teachers happy, of course, like any, you know, any more money does, but does it move the needle on Mississippi education? Is this, would this be outside of increases to educational spending? I mean, this is a standalone just for teachers pay.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. And this is K through 12?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, and teachers, the pay scale is actually in the law. It's not just an annual appropriation. And that pay scale and those numbers that I just mentioned, like the starting salary, all of that is the minimum that teachers can be paid. And so the state provides the districts enough money to pay their teachers that much. But almost all districts supplement that to some degree. Some of them only a little bit, some of them a few thousand dollars. That also doesn't count the people who get nationally certified, whether they're a nationally certified teacher or counselor or they're school nurses. There are different national certifications that if you get that certification that presumably shows that you are way above normal great teacher, that you get $6,000 more per year for having that.
So there are opportunities for teachers to be making close to $60,000 within a few years.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's not a bad living, and you still have got many months off a year. I don't know if they've done I may have seen it before, the calculation of what a teacher would actually make in the private sector if they're working a 12-month job or whatever. I mean, teacher pay, I think, is a little, particularly for Mississippi, when we've got a low cost of living, is probably a little bit more attractive than it's presented in many cases.
Yeah, well, that is the thing, is that especially in small communities, the schools and the hospitals generally are the revenue, are the middle income jobs.
Right. Yeah.
And so in a lot of cases, the healthcare debate is not really one about how do we provide healthcare. It's a jobs argument. It's a how do we maintain the jobs in these local communities, because if you have no more middle income salaries, then even more communities will die.
Yeah. So if you raise teacher pay like this, this money comes from somewhere. Where is it just, I mean, obviously it's appropriated for this purpose. Are they cutting spending somewhere else, or is this some of the things they're looking at this big pot of money they've got from COVID and saying this is the time for us to do it for teachers?
Yes, they're saying that they're estimating that there is enough recurring revenue that's not just based on the COVID bump that they'll be able to pay for this from now on.
Yeah, because whatever the first year bump is, that's a permanent bump.
Yeah, $200 million.
Yeah, so that's ongoing, plus whatever adjustments there are to that in terms of raises and all that stuff.
Right, and the answer to your earlier question is this is separate from any other increase to school funding. If they do that, they might keep the rest of the school funding flat just put the extra money into the teachers.
Yeah. Where do we stand in rankings on education in the country? My recollection is pretty low.
Yeah, we're in the – I mean, of course, we used to always be 50th. Now I think we're in the mid-40s, and, you know, there are – if you believe the national rankings, in the last few years, Mississippi kids have actually done a lot better than the kids in the rest of the country.
Well, there's something to be said for that, I guess.
In fact, there was one year where Mississippi was the only state that had increases, I think, in fourth grade reading and fourth grade math. And the rest of the country was just flat. This is a national representative sample, so it's not every student that takes it, but they do it every 2 years.
Right.
And so the last, last couple of ones, Mississippi has done pretty well.
Well, I'm not ever here to bash anybody's salary, really, for doing anything. I'm a free market guy, so I think they should earn what they're worth. But ultimately, school choice would go a lot farther way to improving the educational outcomes of Mississippi than any school teacher raise would.
Yeah, I remember in the early days of the charter school debate, and there's hearing about in Colorado Springs, which is a sizable city, large school, very large school district, and they had one charter school, and it's very small, but the parents were commenting to the charter school leaders at how much better the school district was treating them as parents, and how much better, more conscientious their teachers even seem to be, and presumably because of the possibility that they could actually lose students.
It's almost like competition kind of breeds that better service, better quality of things when you have a competitive system.
Well, and another interesting thing along that is there's a federally funded study, so it certainly wasn't a think tank kind of a study, in Florida several years ago, and they found that in areas where there was a little bit of competition, maybe one charter school, that the kids in the regular public schools did better than they had before. Where there was a lot of competition, you might have a charter school, they have private school vouchers, it's a magnet school, whatever other options, when they had a lot of options, that the kids in the regular private schools did even better than the ones that had just a little bit of competition. But they found that, when you have more options, it's not like you're picking the cream of the crop to go to these other schools and just warehousing. That's all the phrases that are used. We're just warehousing kids back at the regular public school. No, it's actually that their education improves as well.
Is there any movement, anything going to be proposed on school choice or anything like that in this legislative session?
Well, to some degree, yes. There will be an attempt to have open enrollment across district lines. As we already have that in Mississippi, as long as both districts agree where the child lives and where the child is wanting to go to school. There are cases where a district is willing to take a student from another district, even though they won't get the full amount of money.
That's what I was going to ask. Money right now wouldn't follow that child.
No. They can actually charge the parents some tuition for the difference. Some of them do, some of them don't. But it is where the sending district can reject that transfer. And so there will be bills this year that would take that option away from the sending district.
So does that mean that within JPS, a child could pick their school out of JPS, or does that mean somebody in Jackson could go to school in Madison?
Both, actually.
Oh.
Of course, if it's within the district, then the money wouldn't matter because all the money is at the district level anyway.
Right, but it would essentially be public school choice. You would be able to choose between different public schools.
Right.
I mean, that would be a step, I think, in the right direction. You'd have some schools that would probably wither and die, but there would be an incentive to the teachers at these schools, to the whoever, to not let their school die for bad problems.
And one of the questions will be whether you let, like in that scenario, would Madison County be able to say no to a particular student, or would they just have to say we're not going to take any, or we'll take any as long as we have room? That's up for debate too, that as to what ends up in the final bill.
Well, I can feel right now Madison parents would want an application process or something, because they wouldn't want to to have people sending problem kids from any other school district. And same with Jackson. I mean, if there's a problem kid in Madison, then Jackson doesn't necessarily want to take on another problem child. But I can see parents would be a little protective of their district, particularly when it's doing well. When you get kids in a good, well-performing school district like Madison County School District to think you're going to have an influx of kids from a poor-performing school district, we should have some compassion for the kids who are caught in the crossfire.
Right.
It's not their fault their schools are not teaching them what it is, but I can see they would want to be protective of that, you know, for sure. But anyway, all right, we're talking to Forrest Thigpen, Americans for Prosperity. We're going to take a couple of minutes. I want to talk about this medical marijuana bill and just some of the things that I saw in it. This is not one of AFP's fights necessarily, but there's some financial stuff in here that, yeah, made me a little sick. I'll be right back.
I tear my heart open. I sew myself shut. My weakness is that I can't do much. And my scars remind me that the past is real. I tear my heart open.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WIAB. Correction, 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 correction. Holy cow. I didn't get the memo. The AFP Pints and Policy meeting is tonight at your office, not at the Bulldog.
Yes.
James, are you listening? James that called me a few minutes ago. My great friend James called me a few minutes ago to ask if it was a safe area to go to with the Bulldog. And I told him, assured him it was. But it's an even safer area. You'll be in Ridgeland and the Woodlands there. So, okay, so Pints and Policy tonight is at your office.
Yes.
Okay, and that is where?
That's 795 Woodlands Parkway. And we're on the first floor, easy to find. And it is just off County Line Road.
Right.
So where if a block east of Doe's Eat Place.
Right.
There on County Line Road. And you turn left and we're the first building on the left.
And so that's 795 in the Woodlands. Your Facebook page, best place to find your
yes.
location if somebody's listening and needs to yeah. look it up later.
Yeah. And if you can go there and just click on it, let us know you're coming. Make sure we have it. And because of COVID, I'm the only one in the office, so I think we may end up having pizza instead of barbecue. So we do need to know if you're coming, so please let us know.
I tell you, I'm doing some work with a restaurant last night, and they just employees were dropping like flies about every 2 hours. Tested positive, ding, tested positive.
Oh,
and a staff of I think 6 or 7 last night dwindled down to 4. And one of those was even iffy for a little while there, and more kids saying they're getting tested. So this case demic that's going on right now is so aggravating.
Yeah. and just in case people are worried, I was not around that the person in the time frame that would be necessary.
The people going,
and I've tested, and I'm tested negative.
So. Yeah, I think your constituency, at least the ones that I'm actively involved with, couldn't care less. As a matter of fact, a lot of us would appreciate a COVID party with the Omicron variant. If I had kids right now, I'm not making any medical recommendations to anybody, but this is one of those things where it's a free pass to natural immunity. My son's got it right now. He's got a cold. I mean, you know, that's it. But.
Yeah. So, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to get you back on that topic.
all right, so again, that's Pints and Policy tonight is at the AFP, the Americans for Prosperity offices in Ridgeland at 795. What's the street address?
Woodlands Parkway.
Woodlands Parkway, okay.
And what we'll be doing is talking about the issues in front of the legislature this year.
Right.
Not only our issues, but if people want to come and just ask about issues they're interested in, that's fine too. And so it'll be just a casual conversation.
Okay, will you be talking about Capitol Day, too? That's your next
yes.
big event coming up,
yeah.
So you'll be explaining what that's going to be.
And that's part of it, too, is that we have our Capitol Day in 2 weeks on the 27th. And so because we're wanting people to be prepared to talk to their legislators, that's one of the reasons that we're doing this this week.
So. Right, yeah, so it's to kind of set up the issues that will be covered, and if there's passion
yeah.
for it, get down there.
And if people on Capitol Day, if you're not wanting to talk to your legislator for some reason, you just kind of want to check out the scenery, that's fine. Even if your own legislator you think will vote like you want them to, it is important for us to have people who are there in the Capitol who have the AFP sticker.
Right, absolutely.
So that people can see, this is an organization that we need to listen to.
Yeah.
So even if you don't, even if you're just there and you're attending a committee meeting or you sit in on when the House meets that afternoon, we'll be starting, again, this is 2 weeks from now, not tonight's event. 2 weeks from now, we'll be starting at 11:30 at the Old Capitol Inn, where we will have some speakers, but we also will go over how to talk to your legislator so they'll listen to you. And then we'll cover in a very brief form the issues that we're concerned about. But tonight's event will be more broad-based on kind of like the Open Line Friday idea.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Just a small, intimate gathering with friends, really. And, you know, I've met so many great people through Americans for Prosperity. And I've told people, you know, even if you don't really know, a lot of people don't really care about talking to the legislature. I just told you during the break, I mean, my guy is Joel Baumgarten. I don't think he's ever done anything I've been unhappy with. I got nothing to say to that guy except, hey, great job. I'll give him a thumbs up in his office door. You know, that's it. But to go down there and show it and meet some of the people that are involved in these kinds of issues, it's great to see so many people being mobilized in Mississippi on economic freedom issues, on the personal freedom issues. I mean, it's really has kind of awakened, and I've gotten to know people I would never have met any other way.
Well, and that's especially these days, it's very easy to be so discouraged.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
Think that you're the only one that really is out there, or just a few of you. And so I've mentioned this before on here, the pastor I used to have was talked about the ministry of your presence.
Right, right.
And just by being there, you encourage other people to see, okay, this is something that I need to pay attention to.
Yeah, and for things like Capitol Day, your presence also shows the legislature that people
That's
are
right.
concerned with these issues, even yes. if they're not chewing your ear on anything. They are there to support, you know, the Americans for Prosperity's economic message for Mississippi,
right.
which is lower taxes and more economic freedom.
Right.
We should all be behind that. All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll wrap up on the other side of this. We're talking to Forrest Thigpen with Americans for Prosperity. Stay with us.
Citizens from all over the world, this is Captain America calling. I built you up when you were down on your knees, so will you catch me now? I'm falling.
All right, final segment. We're here with Forrest Thigpen from Americans for Prosperity, just breaking down what's going on in the legislature. And again, if you missed us, the correction. I have been touting the Pints and Policy meeting tonight at the Bulldog. It is not at the Bulldog. It is at the Americans for Prosperity office at 795 Woodlands Parkway in Ridgeland. Visit their website, Americans for Prosperity Mississippi, on Facebook. And they'll have address and everything for you. And please, if there's anybody else that's going to be attending that you know, share that word with them. I don't do social media, so I got no way to get the word out of anything outside of this. This is it. This is I'll tell other hosts today, too, as well. But anything else that's coming out of legislature that we need to really be paying attention to?
Well, they're trying to expand health care access without expanding Medicaid. The lieutenant governor has said that he wants to make sure that we have a way to provide health insurance to people, to full-time employees, people who are working full-time, but he's not going to call it Medicaid expansion or Obamacare. He said he doesn't want to be tied to a term that is associated with a president 3 terms ago.
Oh, Lord. Lord.
So okay. I don't know what form that will take, but that, you know, that's – but and so we're looking at from trying to move the healthcare market more toward a free market. It's not a free market, but moving it toward that is eliminating or severely restricting the certificate of need laws that make you get a permission slip just to compete,
right?
To do most any kind of health service, and then expanding the ability of nurses to actually practice what they've been taught. Which
right.
would help rural areas that don't have healthcare providers, expanding telemedicine to say, you know, during the pandemic, somehow suddenly telemedicine
yeah, it was okay.
was just fine.
Yeah.
And so now that the emergency order is over, we're wanting to make sure that those changes are made permanent.
There may be a couple of bright things that actually come out of all this mess. That may be one of them. I looked at medical marijuana bill, and the one thing I'm just going to put in on this, and this is not really Americans for Prosperity issue at the time right now. They were interested more in the economic side of it, but I noticed they've got a sliding fee on cultivators everywhere from, you know, under 1,000 square feet. You pay a $1,500 registration fee, and then it looks like $5,000 a year, or maybe it's I'm sorry. There's so many different tiers here. But what they did was they got a registration fee. Licensing fee, I guess it would be called, and then an ongoing fee. What I called to attention was, you know, I had Steve Merritt with Southern Sky Brands on here on Tuesday, and his operation, I believe, is a 470,000 square foot facility, I believe. So I was just curious
knowing him. And I think they're looking at a $40,000 licensing fee and then $100,000 a year in ongoing fees. The thing to me about that, and you made a point off air that, you know, they may incur some testing if the state is going to, they may be incurring some expenses. If the state is going to be testing, then they would be kind of funding the testing through these fees, theoretically. The thing that I always look at with these things is corporations don't pay taxes. People do. And any of these fees that the legislature puts on any of the grow operations, the dispensaries, just any of these fees are all going to be paid by the patients because right. they are going to have to be reflected in the price of their product.
Yeah.
And so if the legislature is very excited about all the money that's going to come to them from these fees or from anything else from this program, that is going to be paid by patients,
yeah.
you know, and I think that just needs to be considered every
well,
time.
Well, and anytime you have fees, it is, and I think there have even maybe been some court rulings at the federal level on this, but if you have fees, then they are supposed to just cover whatever the cost is of the agency that's charging the fees.
Yeah.
Beyond the cost of doing business, basically, it is a tax.
Right.
And so if I don't know where they got those numbers. I don't know if it's, you know, because yeah. if a facility is bigger, they have to do more of whatever it is that they're going to be doing. I'm not sure. But yeah.
All right. Well, we'll check it out. Forrest Thigpen, Americans for Prosperity, thanks for coming in. Pints and Policy tonight at their office. Check out Americans for Prosperity Mississippi on Facebook. I'll
no
see you all tomorrow.
No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now. No matter how